It is Friday, February 2nd. You're listening to The Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn, and you're riding home with me. And this is a Friday show, which means you might get it Saturday or Sunday, because I know that I don't have to do another show the next day, so I don't really get in a hurry to upload this one. I'm going to hang out with my kids tonight, if I can. As you frequent listeners know, all four of them have the flu. My wife has the flu, and I think my mother-in-law, who's been staying with us, has come down with it too. So, might be another lonely night while everybody else is in bed, but I hope I get to see them. And I hope you guys have a good weekend. Thanks for joining me all week long on The Christian Commute, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I have a full show for you today. I have a question in the inbox. And I have a show topic called Terminate the Music Minister. Terminate the Music Minister. But first, as always, we'll do the Bible chapter review. And today's review comes from Ephesians chapter 5. And we're in just one verse. Verse 28. Ephesians 5, verse 28. I do that every day. Maybe one day I'll get it right. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28. Just one verse today. And we're talking about the Christian life as compared to the Gentile life. Putting on the new self. Right? So steal no longer could be the theme of this one verse. Steal no longer. Paul says, he who steals must steal no longer. Rather, he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good. And he gives a why. He doesn't just end it there. It would be kind of obvious if he did end it there. Why should you not steal? Oh, thou shalt not steal. What should you do instead? Work with your own hands. Earn your living. That is a Christian work ethic. But he doesn't end it there. Oh my gosh. I can't do the Bible chapter review because traffic is so bad. I'm trying to get over, but I can't glance at my show notes. I'm stuck in the right lane. It's this Friday weekend traffic. I guess a bunch of people from Tennessee are visiting Atlanta. I don't know. So let's go over this Bible. Oh, come on, Audi. There's an Audi behind me like trying to swerve around like we're on a NASCAR track. Give me a break. Okay. Let's start this Bible chapter verse again, and we'll get to the why. He who steals must steal no longer. Rather, he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who is in need. I think there's three things that we need to focus on in this one verse to make it come out as robust as it should. We should focus on loving thy neighbor. We should focus on the Ten Commandments. And we can negatively focus on the prosperity gospel and the word of faith movement. First of all, what is either the second part of the greatest commandment or the second greatest commandment? I guess you could call it the second greatest commandment, because that's what Jesus called it. The greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. The second is like it. Love your neighbor, in parentheses, who is made in God's image, close parentheses, as yourself. I added the parentheses. But that's why the second is like it. It's about loving someone else. Love your neighbor as yourself. Paul not only tells people, leave your old self behind, put on the new self, don't act like you used to before God regenerated you, don't steal, but rather do the opposite of that, work and earn a living. But he doesn't just stop there. He doesn't stop at not stealing. Thou shalt not steal. That's obvious. But working is about having, and it's not about having something for yourself, at least not totally. It's also about having something for your neighbor if your neighbor is in need. And the Audi, is it Audi or Audi? My Latin teacher told me the car company was named after the Latin term for listen. Because Latin, or Audi, I should say, Audi maybe, is the Latin imperative for listen. Listen! But then that was before the Google days. I think it's just named after some German guy. So now the frustrated Audi is behind the same slow person I'm behind. Hope you're happy. All right, thou shalt not steal. Paul just isn't saying don't steal. And work is not just done for the purpose of supporting yourself, but what? Having something for your neighbor who is in need. And it is here that we must analyze the Ten Commandments, the four on the left and the six on the right. Now let's see if I can outdo John Proctor and name all ten. I will not name them in order, most likely. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Do not take the name of the Lord in vain. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And listen, that's the four on the left. And for some reason, I know them in King James words, even though I don't read the King James Bible regularly. I read the New American Standard. But there are some things I know in King James words, and that's one. Now the six on the right. You say, on the right of what? Well, two stone tablets. I don't know if the four were on the right and the six were on the left. But what I'm getting at is four are about God and six are about your neighbor. So we've gone over the four that are about God, right? Because remember, Jesus said, and I've gone over this before, the greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. And after he said that, he said, all the law and the prophets are grounded in this. In other words, here, the Ten Commandments are grounded in this. Have no other God before me. Don't make any graven images. Remember the Sabbath day, because the Lord set the Sabbath day apart. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Those are four commandments about God. To keep them, you need to be loving God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and putting God before you. Now, let's look at the rest of the six commandments. These commandments are about your neighbor. And to keep them, you need to love your neighbor as yourself. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's donkey, thy neighbor's wife, whatever thy neighbor's had. Don't covet. Thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not murder. Not thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not murder. Honor your father and mother, so that your days will be long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Don't lie. And finally, for the purposes of this analysis, thou shalt not steal. Stealing hurts your neighbor. Working helps your neighbor. He who steals must steal no longer. Rather, he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who is in need. The one who is in need is your neighbor. Not only are you not to steal from him, but you are to work so that you may help him. And with that, we'll move into a negative application of this verse, the prosperity gospel. Why would your neighbor have need if the prosperity gospel were true? If everyone in your church is naming and claiming it and sowing seeds, why in the world would they need help from you? If they have claimed God's promises and claimed that promotion and claimed that car and claimed that new job and claimed that new house and claimed that grocery bill and claimed that credit card bill, if they're just naming and claiming it, if they are a little God speaking reality into existence, why in the world is anyone needy in your church? Why would you have need to share with anyone? You would all have your own named and claimed jobs and you'd be rolling in it. But the only one really truly rolling in it is the prosperity preacher, the prosperity pimp, Kenneth Copeland, Creflo Dollar, Benny Hinn, and their ilk, Joel Osteen, most famously. Here the Bible implicitly rebukes the very world in which the prosperity gospel sets up its foundation. The prosperity gospel is an unbiblical lie. Why? Because the Bible speaks about you having needy neighbors. In the church is the context here. These people are in the church. Why am I having feedback? Come on, I'm making the Bible point. Don't you hate it when I'm making the main Bible point and I'm really going well and traffic gets messed up or my phone messes up? That's what happened there. Anyway, remember that the next time you need to refute some prosperity gospel person. Why is Paul talking about needy people and how we have to work to help them? Why don't I just name and claim all this stuff that I don't need to give away because everybody should already have it? How about that? Moving on to the inbox, Stephanie from Dallas, Georgia writes in again. I answered her question yesterday. And she does believe in the perseverance of the saints. She just worded her question poorly. Thank you, Stephanie. She does, in fact, go to church with my friend. All right, so another one from Dallas, Georgia. In fact, I have another one from Stephanie for Monday. Hooray! Three times in a row. I think that ties Michael's record for writing in questions in a row. So you guys, don't forget to write in to SethDunn88@gmail.com. Don't let Stephanie have all the fun. SethDunn88@gmail.com. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance. Send in your question about theology and apologetics. Your questions about theology and apologetics, because I want to be grammatically correct. You can send in your question about theology or your question about apologetics or your questions about apology and about apologetics and theology. All right, enough with me being pedantic. You can also send in show topic suggestions to SethDunn88@gmail.com. Keep them short so I can memorize them. Stephanie did her best to keep this question short. What is the best way to judge if someone is going too far with hidden meanings? Hidden meanings in the Bible. And she gives the background. She has some friends who are really interested in Jewish culture. Almost to the point like where they're trying to be Messianic Jews, but they're not Jews. And they're posting about blood moons and stuff like that. And another thing they're interested in is the walk to Emmaus. Now, the walk to Emmaus, I don't think that has anything to do with Messianic Judaism. But it does have something to do with kind of mysticism. God is speaking to us. I think it comes out of the United Methodist Church, which is a liberal church. The walk to Emmaus should be avoided. But what about these people who look for hidden meanings or try to be Jewish? Number one, Gentiles should not try to be Jewish. How do we know that? Because in the Acts, people, they had a council and got together and said Gentiles don't have to act Jewish. And then the Judaizers tried to make Gentiles act Jewish, and Paul said, you're cut off, you're accursed, you're anathema if you make that part of the gospel. Now, if somebody wants for God's sake not to eat shrimp, I guess let him, but it does. I don't understand why a Gentile would chain himself up like that and not have liberty. So whenever somebody's getting too interested in kind of that like Jewish thing or being like a Messianic Jew, Stephanie, like watch out, they'll soon be Judaizers. But as far as looking into the blood moons and the Shemitahs, and you have a question, how do you know or how do you judge when somebody's going too far with hidden meanings? That would be when they start talking about hidden meanings. Because remember, their mysteries are being revealed. When Paul says God's revealing mysteries, it's basically saying there was a hidden meaning and here God's revealed it. The Bible warns about foolish speculation, especially when it comes to eschatology in the end times. Nobody knows when it's going to happen. So if somebody says they do know, you look at the Bible where it says nobody knows and you say they're lying. It's going to come like a thief in the night, not expecting it. And we are expecting it, but we don't know exactly when. So all this end times speculation is foolish. And whatever the hidden meaning of, it kind of, I don't know, undoes the point of special revelation. There's general revelation, which is like the world and trees and clouds and stuff. And there's special revelation, which is God's Word revealed to us in Scripture. Why would He hide it in a New Testament context? The mysteries have been revealed to the church. Revelation is kind of hard to understand, and that's the problem in that people with eschatology, without denying the Trinity or some other historic Orthodox doctrine, can kind of take eschatology and make it their own thing and say, well, this is a hidden meaning back here. And they're safe to do that without being called heretics. But that's foolish speculation. Rather than looking for hidden meaning, which is Gnosticism, or like Gnosticism, I should say, people should focus on the revealed, understood meaning. God is not the author of confusion. Right? And we had Gnostics in the first century, Stephanie. Gnostics threatening the church, saying, oh, there's hidden knowledge, gnosis, knowledge. And to really understand Christianity or to really understand the world, you have to get this hidden knowledge. Hidden meaning stuff and conspiracy theories and, you know, blood moon and super moon prophecies are just silly. It's foolish speculation. It makes us look stupid before the world. And I'll give you the best example of this ever. The blood moons. You know, John Hagee, that crackpot, wrote his book, Four Blood Moons. And then he went on a program with David Barton, himself, Hugh Ross, and some other person, I forget who was there. And they were talking about the blood moons. And Hugh Ross is a real astronomer. Like, he's got a doctorate in that. That's his job, astronomy. And he's gotten into Christian apologetics, but he is an actual astronomer who knows about the moon and space and planets and stuff. And they were talking about the blood moons, and Hugh Ross said, now you understand the context for those unfamiliar with the blood moons. John Hagee said, well, there's these four blood moons, which is a moon that looks really red. But blood moon sounds cool, because the moon's going to turn to blood. And there's four blood moons, and this means that there's going to be historic events in the life of Israel. And Hugh Ross just sat there and said, you know, you can't even see the blood moons from Israel. You can't see them. You can see them from America, but not Israel. And you Google this. It's on YouTube. And John Hagee sits there and is like, oh, I wouldn't wear that. I didn't know that. Yeah, you didn't know it. Because you're not an astronomer. You're a kook looking for hidden meanings to sell books to people who aren't very bright. Stephanie, these are the people who watch, like, Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. Not because they want to know something true, because they want to know something scintillating. So if somebody's talking about hidden meanings, they've gone too far. Now, if somebody says there's a hidden meaning in the Old Testament, and here in the New Testament it's brought out by special revelation, that's different when you're talking about double fulfillment prophecies, like now, not yet prophecies. But when you're looking into eschatological things to find hidden meanings, it's like, remember, God's not the author of confusion. And whoever's looking up these hidden meanings and posting about this stuff on Facebook just looks silly. They're not being salt and light. They're being silly. So, Stephanie, I hope that helped. Now let's go on to today's show topic, terminating the music minister. I'm not talking about my music minister. I'm talking about any music minister. Growing up in church, I've just accepted that there's to be a music minister. There's a guy who gets up there and directs music, whether it be directing a choir, directing the congregation, or leading a praise band, depending on time and culture and church style. I've just accepted that there's somebody like that. And I've just accepted that that person is a paid employee, because that's how it's always been. And a bunch of you are probably accepted it the same way. That's how it's always been. You've never questioned it. And I think the best paid music minister that I've ever been around was Chaz Childers. And he was the music minister at Expedition Church, where I went previously. And he was paid $1 a year on his W-2. And in my opinion, that's a dollar more than his services were worth, Babdecostal. But anyway, that's why I think he's the best. payroll is a big chunk of church expenses. It gets to be up to 60% of total church revenue is in payroll, paying this pastor and that pastor and that pastor over there. And most churches, you know, they'll start with one pastor, and then they say, we need another pastor. And it's either going to be a youth minister or a music minister, and sometimes the youth minister and the music minister are the same guy. And then maybe an education minister as the church grows. But it gets to be where there's so many paid pastors that 60% of the church's revenue is not going to missions and other, or church, it's not going to missions or self-sustaining church expenses. It's going to pay people. It's going to salary and payroll. I want to ask yourself, a question. How many plumbers do you have in your church? How many plumbers? How many carpenters? How many insurance salesmen? Just think of things like that. How many people would come in on a Saturday in church and have the ability and the competence to fix a plumbing problem in the building? Or come in and do some carpentry work? Not as like a week-long bid-out project, but something like that. And if you're thinking of it, you can probably think of a lot of it. Now, how many in your people in your church play tennis or softball? Could you field a tennis team or a softball team at your church? Probably not everybody plays those sports, but somebody does. Because you're talking about a group of people who have various hobbies and skills. Now, how many people in your church can play a musical instrument and read music? Think about it. The music minister, if you have one, definitely can. But what about all the people in the choir? What about all the people in the orchestra or praise band if you have one? At my church, we have a guy on the bass guitar, we have a guy on the drums, we have a guy on another guitar. Sometimes we have a guy that plays the trumpet. We have a lady on the keyboards. We have a pianist. Actually, the bass guitarist is the music minister. So we have two guys on the guitar, the bass guitarist, sometimes a guy playing a horn, keyboardist, pianist, and then the choir. All of those people have musical skills. That's why they're in the choir and the praise band. Right. So I want you to think of your church. You got a music minister there. Maybe your music minister is a volunteer, bivocational. But he might be, you know, costing $60,000, $40,000, $20,000 a year. And his sole expenditure relates to the quote-unquote music program of your church. Why in the world do you need that? Have you ever thought about that? Now, I'm not saying it's unbiblical to have a music minister, because somebody will point out that there were Levites in the temple in Old Testament times, and it was their job to play music. And they were supported. I'm not saying it's wrong to support someone who leads music in the church, but I'm asking you, do you not have 10 people who could do that for free? And how advanced does it have to be? Now, if you're one of these churches who tries to use the Aryan snare and tries to use upbeat music to attract people to your concert atmosphere, that's a different thing. It's like hiring a salesman to sell stuff. At my company, we have salesmen and we have to pay them. Well, why do we do that? Because the stuff ain't going to sell itself. You have to pay the salesman. All right? So if your church uses its music ministry because it's cool to play awesome rock and music to draw people in, I understand why you're paying a music minister. But what if your church's music ministry is just to make a joyful noise to the Lord? Do you really need a professional who makes $20,000, $40,000, $60,000 a year, whatever his capacity is, and takes up part of that 60% payroll revenue? How many of you at your church have somebody who fills in for the music minister when he's gone on vacation? And they do a perfectly adequate job. So we want you to think about this. That there's 12 months in a year. If you have 6 people in your church who are musically skilled, and I bet you do, look around. You have 6 people singing and playing instruments. You might have 60. How big's your choir? Do you not have 6 people who would volunteer to take on the choir and music responsibilities for 2 months just to serve the church? Think about that in terms of Sunday school teachers. Sunday school teachers don't get paid. They prepare a lesson every week. They email around. They look after people if somebody's sick. It's almost, I mean, they're not pastors, but they act pastorally in a way. And, oh, so-and-so hadn't been in a couple weeks. I need to check on them. Or so-and-so's sick. Let me take them some soup. Or I'm going to go visit so-and-so in the hospital. Arguably, they, you know, they're not only just teaching doctrine or parroting Lifeway, Bible Explorer, but they're doing other stuff. And they do it for free. And nobody ever thinks, maybe we should pay the Sunday school teacher. Well, no, but you have a paid education minister. Why? Hey, why do you have a paid education minister if your church is just using Lifeway materials and you have facilitators and not teachers? Oh, wait, that's not the subject of this show. Back to music ministers. I guarantee you most churches could get away without having a full-time music minister. And it might surprise you to know that pretty much anybody in ministry who's what we'd call a senior pastor, a lead pastor, who's a preacher, they know how to sing. Hadaway, over here in Cartersville, former president of the Georgia Baptist Convention, senior pastor at Tabernacle, one of the biggest churches in town. His undergrad degree's in music. He could lead music in a heartbeat. I went to Brother Williams Church down in Bogalusa, Louisiana. Now, this is a little church, guys. I mean, 20 people maybe there, okay? And they can't afford a full-time music minister. Brother Williams, a preacher. What's Brother William get up there and do? He leads worship. His wife plays the piano. His kids play the piano. Brother William and his family could form a traveling gospel band if they wanted to. I mean, those people are musical. But here's the point. That church isn't paying a music minister. What's Brother William get up there and do? Pulls out the hymn book. They got a couple of them. He tells his wife, we're going to do 111 in the Baptist hymnal. They flip to it. Everybody flips to it. And then they sing. All right, next song. Then they sing. Brother William just plans it out. If Brother William's church can do that, and it's small, and their praise to the Lord is no worse or no better than yours, why do you need a paid music minister? So I want you to think about this. Maybe you're on the finance or personnel committee at your church. All right? And you may like your music minister. It's not about him doing anything bad. But is that position as a paid position needed? How come people volunteer for free to teach Sunday school and volunteer for free to do parking lot duty and volunteer in the nursery, but for whatever reason, the music minister, he gets paid? It's like playing professional baseball, okay? The minimum payment or the minimum salary for a professional baseball player is $600,000 a year. I would go play professional baseball for what I make now, which is not $600,000 a year. You know, I do need to support my family as my job. No one would want to watch me because I wouldn't be that good, but I'd do it and I'd love to. People who sing in church do it and they love it. They do it for free. Why are you paying someone to do what a bunch of other people would do it for free? Well, Seth, they might not do it as well. So what? Whip out a piano and a hymn book. It's not that complicated. It's only complicated when people start adding orchestras and rock music and all this business. And I'm telling you, guys, the bad theology slips in through the music. Hillsong, Jesus Culture, Elevation Music, Phillips Craig and Dean, they're modalists. Sometimes the worst theologian in the church is the worst, not the worst one in the church, but the worst paid theologian in the church is the music minister. Now, has this ever happened to anybody at church? Because this has happened at places that I've gone to church. Is the music minister stops and says, the Lord said this to me today. The Lord's placed it on my heart. I was thinking about this, or it says this. And I always cringe. I'm like, oh, you're not the preacher for a reason. I just think it's a waste of money. Yeah, of course we need to sing music. That's part of the worship service. Why in the world are we hiring professionals to do this? Why? Why are we paying $20,000 for this? Or $50,000 in benefits? Can anybody tell me why this is the highest and best use of God's money? So let's think about it like this. The International Mission Board can put a missionary on the field for $50,000 a year, thereabouts. Let's call it $60,000 to make it even. And there are three churches. Let's say Bartow County, where I live, Gordon County, and then the next county up, Cobb County. So these are three neighboring counties right here in Georgia. So let's say there are three churches in this county that have bivocational music ministers, and they each earn $20,000 a year. That's what they cost the church. Would it be better for the kingdom to fund a $60,000 missionary to go evangelize lost people every single day, or pay three bivocational ministers, music ministers, $20,000 a year to stand there and tell you what to sing, to point at the overhead projector, which some unpaid volunteer is running, by the way, while an unpaid volunteer choir stands behind them, full of unpaid volunteer musicians. Now, hold on. If you're at Andy Stanley's church, the musicians get paid like $250 or $500 a Sunday. They're pros, but they're there for a reason. They're selling something, all right? But your church, I bet your musicians don't get paid. Maybe the pianist gets $20 or something like that. So he has an army of free labor, and he stands there and he says, I decided what four songs we're going to sing this week, and I led choir practice. Now everybody stand up, look at the projector. I am a friend of God. I am a friend of God. He calls me friend. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus Christ, His righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. And if our God is for us, then who could stand against us? And if our God is with us, then who could stand against? You're a good, good Father. It's who you are. It's who you are, and I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. I guarantee every one of you knew those songs, because we sing the same songs over and over. Why are you paying some guy to come up there and tell you to look at the projector over and over? Oh, he led choir practice. Without him, we couldn't have special music. All right, what's more worth it? Special music or a missionary? Government bureaucracies, as they get bigger, tend to create jobs for people. And then as time marches on, people forget why the job was created. But it's in the budget, so we keep it. Without ever wondering why this was done. And I want you to think about all the little churches 50 and 100 years ago with one pastor, before people invented business model church, before people invented youth pastors, and before people invented education pastors. Look it up. Happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. They didn't exist. Church is 2,000 years old. 2,000. And there'd just be the guy, I don't care what denomination it was, he was a pastor, there was an old lady who played the piano, and the people sang, and the people praised God. And I guess they spent $20,000 adjusted for inflation on missions, and the church grew. Now, in the United States at least, the church shrinks. People die, they're not replaced. My county's been 80% unchurched right here in the Bible Belt for 10 years. What if every church in the county, all 34 Baptist churches, and then all those other people who were wrong, what if they stopped having a professional music minister and put all that money towards missions and just told the pastor, whip out the hymn book and sing? Listen, it happens every Sunday night at my church. We have Sunday night service. The youth minister whips out the hymn book and we sing. It's perfectly good. It's not as fancy as the time before. And listen, I'm not trying to pick on my music minister at my church or the way my church does things. I'm saying I've just noticed this. Man, I'm 35 years old. I've been in church my whole life. I'm starting to question things. Why do we do this? I'm not questioning the scripture. I'm not questioning who Jesus is. I'm questioning why do churches spend $20,000 to $80,000 on these music ministers. I'm not trying to sell my church on anybody. If somebody comes to my church and says, well, that music wasn't good enough for me, don't come back. I don't need you. Lord doesn't need you. We don't need you. Now, interestingly enough, part of the reason why I joined my church instead of others when I was looking was because of the music. Not because of the quality of the music, but because of the selections. It's blended worship, which means two out of four songs are good. At least because they're hymns, which everybody can do. right? And then every once in a while we have a decent contemporary song. They're not all bad. But it was the theological song suggestion. It wasn't how good people were. I don't care how big the choir is. I like a big choir, quite frankly. I like an orchestra and choir. I think it's good. Music and singing is good, all right? And I don't want to get into the Church of Christ because they're heretics, but, you know, they're not allowed to have music and they get along just fine without it. They also get along just fine without sound doctrine. That's another problem. But you see what I'm getting at? Do you question that? Now, don't fire your music minister like he's doing a bad job or he's sleeping with a secretary or he's a heretic or something. I'm saying just terminate the music minister. Terminate him. It's like a bank teller. You're a great bank teller. You've been in this bank for 20 years. We needed you to take money and put it in the vault and to bring money to customers. But you know what? We have an ATM now and people do online banking on their phones. We used to need 10 bank tellers. Now we need 2. So 8 of you are terminated. You're not doing a bad job. It's just we don't need your job. And think of a job that people would go do for free, like volunteerism, like all the jobs people do at your church for free. Running the sound booth, going to the nursery, teaching Sunday school, parking lot duty, greeter. How come they're not paid and some are? Well, you can't pay all the jobs because everybody would just be paying themselves to go to church, and that's silly. Why is your church paying for a service, a ministerial vocational service that 10% of the church members could do and would do for free? Terminate the music minister. Put that money towards missions. Differentiate yourself very well from sales churches and event churches and concert churches. You think Cross Point Church in Cartersville, Georgia, and their rock band, you think they're going to fire their rock band ministry? No. How about you do yours and stop being super secret sensitive? Seth's lost it. He's going crazy. He's just against stuff. No, I'm just thinking. Won't you join me? Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back again tomorrow. Sorry for all you listeners of the show who are music ministers. Nothing against y'all. Some of y'all are doing a good job. Lord willing, I'll be back with you Monday. And as always, God bless.